and welcome to This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that changed their lives. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and today we're going to hear first from Tommy Grace, who played synthesizers in Django Django, and then from Austin guitarist and songwriter Adrian Quesada. But first, I have something to admit to you, dear listener. Our theme song, the one that plays beneath me even as we speak, I have been pronouncing the name of this song wrong since the podcast started. It's pronounced Mahout, not Mahout. My apologies to Hardproof Afrobeat, who, by the way, just released a live record on Jim Eno's Public Hi-Fi label. I'm not sure why I went with that pronunciation, because it's actually spelled Mahout, like M-A-H-O-U-T, but oops. I just decided that that was how it was pronounced, and then I went with it, but I am here to admit my mistake, and from this day forward, we'll pronounce it as Mahout, unless, like, I forget or something. Okay, so let's get into this episode. Tommy Grace is, like I said, the synth player in the British band Django Django, a band that we all dig here at the radio station where we make this podcast, KUTX. They play rock that is inextricably tied to art. In fact, they all met at the Edinburgh School of Art, and a big part of their sound is directly related to the synths that Tommy plays. They released a record in 2015 called Born Under Saturn, and they came to Austin on their tour around that record. And while they were in our fair city, they stopped into our performance studio here at KUTX, Studio 1A. They actually played a very stripped down set. And afterwards, Tommy sat down with me and told me about a song that pretty much got him interested in making electronic music. So here he is, Tommy Grace.
But when I was growing up as a teenager, I guess I was like heavily influenced by what my brother was listening to and some other friends, and it was
your
really
older brother?
My older brother, yeah. But I really looked up to him, but he it was like Zeppelin. Sabbath. Like Deep Purple. I totally obsessed over these albums in a way that I don't think kids probably obsess about albums so much these days, because there's such a proliferation of them and it's all at your fingertips. But back then it was literally just, you know, a bunch of records, like a small, you know, I could probably hold all the records that were in my household, you know, and like carry them from one room to another. You know, so there's not very many, and so you really get to know these records. I was growing up during the 80s, and I felt strongly that anything with a drum machine was false and not valid.
That cuts out a lot of music
in the 80s.
It does,
doesn't it? Yeah. So I don't know. I can't really explain it.
You were looking for maybe something authentic, which, like,
yeah, I guess
in the 80s it was all synths and drum machines. Yeah, and,
yeah. And I just didn't buy into that, which is the perverse thing is that this, you know, it's drum machines and synths that are totally my thing now in Django Django. So this is why I was mentioning this is, so the thing that my epiphany, I remember this quite well. My memory's generally really awful, but this I do remember. It would have been, oh God, what year would it have been? But I must have been 15, maybe 16, and we were down Morningside Park, this is the area of Edinburgh where I grew up, and my pal, Ian, who looked quite a lot older than me, but wasn't really much older than me, had just come back from Ibiza. This is when people go to Ibiza and go into clubs and stuff like that.
Don't people still go to...
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they totally do. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Ibiza, we say. Ibiza.
The
Spanish.
Ibiza.
Ibiza, yeah.
But he'd just come back from Ibiza, and he just... Because we used to play football in the park. Playing football, there was this like concrete tennis court, and we'd play football there throughout all the summers and stuff. And we'd listen to, generally, we'd only really listen to like UB40 or, in fact, it was just pretty much solid blanket UB40 for some reason.
Like Red Red Wine, you mean?
No. Like the first album, like 12 Bar and stuff, and which is still a great album. I was listening to it the other day there. I was like, wow, this is great. But he came back. He came back from Ibiza with this tape of, you know, like a whole bunch of like Paul Oakenfold and like Pete Tong, like mixtapes, mm-hmm. dance music, like proper dance music. You know, and I was really, really suspicious of this. But he put on this one tape, and I remember because we taped it so it would just repeat. So
Back in the day, literally, before you could press the button.
So we were playing football and we just listened to the song over and over and over again, and it was totally like nothing I'd ever heard. It was this tune, Josh Wink, Higher State of Consciousness. Literally just a drum machine and like a 303 bass line, and that is it. And then the 303 bass line gets modulated, and so there's this just incredible crescendo throughout the whole song until it drops. It's just totally magical, and this, like I said, it had a huge effect on me, and it made me completely reconsider. Everything else seemed so bloated after listening to this pure, like, energy, and it was just seemed really cool, and it seemed really raw. And
was it the simplicity of it? Was it that they did the simplicity, so much with so little?
Yeah. There's a totally amazing economy to it, and purpose. There's no noodling. It's just totally like right on, and just get like hits you like between the eyes, you know. And after that, I started listening to a whole load of dance music, and then subsequently, after listening to dance music, then I started thinking, well, maybe. What else is going on? Like what? And then I started listening to a whole bunch of like post punk and stuff. I got into like the bands that I love now. You know, like bands like Talking Heads. Devo. Stuff like that. Like that. It was. Josh Wink that softened me up for all that like a huge canon of electronic music.
And were you playing music when you heard this? I mean, you were playing soccer, but were you?
Well, I was always playing piano. Yeah, I was making music. I always had a PC. Well, at this time I would have had a PC. I tried making music in my Atari ST, which was a popular computer in the day for making dance music, but I never really cracked it. But I got a PC and I was always making like weird sort of MIDI tunes. And then later I started doing stuff with a bunch of mates. Because I was taking piano lessons, but I was only playing. We just had a cabinet organ, like an old Farfisa cabinet organ in the house, and it's cool. It's cool, but it's not piano, and I always found it quite frustrating. But we took a door off my kitchen. We took a door off its hinges in the kitchen and put a couple of skateboards on it, and me and my pals, four pals, took this cabinet organ and lifted it onto this door and moved it four blocks up the road into a garage that we rented out. And we were like, yeah, this is amazing. We're going to have our own garage. We're going to have our own space. We're going to make tunes. But we didn't make a lot of music. We kind of like just wrecked this garage and smoked a lot there.
It was more of a space for hanging out.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
You were composing music kind of before when you were still into classic rock. And then you heard this Josh Wink song.
Yeah.
And then was that when you went home and like started trying to like...
It was, well, I suppose... then, yeah, it would have been. I guess not long after that is when I bought my first synth, which is still a synth that we tour with. It was the Roland Juno.
Oh, the Juno.
Yeah,
so good.
Which is like a, you know, it's they're really great, really reliable, really cool, like as a first synth or something like that.
Do you still play the actual same?
We've got a spare, but it is our spare. Juno.
Oh, wow.
So we take around two in case one goes wrong. So yeah, then I would just be just making these weird songs. Like looking back, I lost a load of them, but it was back in the MySpace days and I had a MySpace page and I would like post these songs that I was composing. It was literally only using the Juno. I would even use the Juno just for percussive sounds and like use a bit of white noise for a snare and... you can get sort of bass drummy sounds from it. And they sound like sort of library music or sort of soundtracky stuff. Mm-hmm. I can't sing, so there's no vocals on them. But there'd be like sort of goth, either like sort of really gothic-y. Like I'm a big fan of like John Carpenter and his soundtracks and stuff like that. So there'd be like maybe arpeggio-led, gothic sort of sound things.
And then that kind of carries over into what you do now.
It does, yeah. I mean, I suppose if it wasn't for me doing that, then Dave, so it was Dave and Vinny that started writing songs with Django Django. They had a MySpace page as well. It's just that their MySpace page had a lot more fans than mine did. but it got to a stage where the stuff that they'd been writing in their bedroom, they were getting gig offers coming in, but they had no idea how to, you know, pull us off live because there was loads of layers in there. I guess Dave knew the stuff that I was writing and thinking that I could complement, plus he knew like I had a couple of synths that would be handy to get in the live setup and stuff.
The Juno
because the stuff that I collect is nearly all from like very late 70s to like not even mid 80s. I think in the mid 80s things went a bit digital with like the Yamaha DX7, which sort of changed everything. But there's this great period from like 78 to 84 where loads of amazing synths were produced, and quite a lot of the synths that I've got are from the same sort of era, and they were all designed to sort of talk to each other, so it's quite easy to link them up together.
Oh,
but
yeah.
If you get like a modern thing and then try and hook them up with that, they don't talk so well together. So
right.
A lot of the stuff I have from that era, it's not coincidental that a lot of the music that I like is also from that sort of time, like the all that post-punk stuff that I was mentioning.
Shake and Tremble from Django Django's 2015 record, Born Under Saturn. And you know what? I need to explore the catalog of Josh Wink now. I mean, I kind of missed 90s techno. Like, I was there, but I was too busy listening to PJ Harvey and Liz Phair. But I really liked Higher State of Consciousness. I listened to it all the way through. And like Tommy said, it's so simple, yet so impactful, and I can see why it led him away from classic rock and down the path of electronic music. And you too can listen to Higher State of Consciousness all the way through on the Spotify playlist we made for this episode. It's got every song that gets referenced all in one place because, really, we feel like you should have a chance to listen to all these songs all the way through. Now, if you liked the interview you just heard, then I'd like to take a moment and ask you to please click on over to iTunes and leave a rating or a review, because ratings and reviews, they do a lot for this podcast. They raise our profile in iTunes so that other people can find this podcast and hear artists like Tommy Grace and Mark Mothersbaugh, who is in one of Tommy's favorite bands, Devo, by the way, talk about life-changing music. Plus, ratings and reviews, they bolster the morale of the This Song team. And we are a team. We're a team of interviewers and editors and social media folks who all work to make this podcast happen. And knowing that people are listening to our work and digging it, it gives us like a soul-filling boost of energy. So thanks in advance. Okay, back to the music. Next up, we have the incredibly musically prolific Adrian Quesada. Now, I've known Adrian, or known of Adrian, for over a decade because the band that he founded and that used to back up Prince for a while, Grupo Fantasma, played one of my best friend's weddings, like back in the day. He's no longer with Grupo, but he does play in Brownout, a band that shares members with Grupo Fantasma, and he started the band Spanish Gold with Patrick Callahan from My Morning Jacket and Dante Schwebel, and he just released a record with his solo project, The Echocentrics, called Echo Hotel. He describes their sound as psychedelic and dusty southern fried soul, which is like a great description. He came into KUTX and told me about a genre of music that really, like, inspired so much of the music that he makes today. So here he is, Adrian Quesada.
I know it's a little vague to pick a genre, but I think you know, probably the biggest musical influence in my life that is still relevant today was hip hop music. Mm-hmm. Was probably the biggest game changer for me.
Here come the drums.
Here come the drums. In Laredo, there wasn't a lot of that culture down there. You know, there was hardly Black people at that time in Laredo, honestly, and it's a little more diverse now, but it was a little secluded back then. And so, you know, I came into hip-hop through MTV. I was a only child, so I was at home a lot by myself and watched a lot of TV. At first, MTV played a few kind of hip-hop songs like Houdini. Basketball is my favorite sport.
Earth's flow. Basketball is my favorite sport. I like the way they dribble up and down the court. Just like I'm the king on the microphone. So it's Dr. J and Moses Malone.
I had these older neighbors that were like 13 and they used to play basketball all the time. My mom had all this kind of crafty stuff because she used to have a clothing store. So I made this t-shirt. I was much younger than them, with puff paints that said basketball is my favorite sport. And I went to go play basketball with them, and they all just started laughing at me and they were making fun of me, and I ran back home and like took off the t-shirt. But
oh no.
Then eventually, yeah, they were mean.
You're like, no guys, this is hip. Like,
yeah,
I
was totally cool. Yeah, exactly. And but then eventually they had, you know, a dedicated show, which was Yo MTV Raps, and that was, I think, the turning point for me of like, I was just obsessed with that. A handful of friends in Laredo that I had that were into hip hop, but not really. It was kind of more for a metal and like skate punk town, but I just got obsessed with it. And I think that's the thing that influenced me the most. You know, even nowadays, I think that kind of informed where I was going musically.
Can you remember like what it was about hip hop as opposed to like the other stuff that was being played on?
Yeah, that's
on
a good
MTV?
It's a good question. I mean, I was still into, you know, the rock stuff that was on MTV and would play air guitar with my friend and watching TV and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. You know, there was certain stuff like NWA that at that time it was kind of raunchy stuff. Like the way that they say like early rock and roll was dangerous, you know, when you're a little kid and you want something dangerous and rebellious and everything. To me, just rock and roll wasn't that dangerous, and there was something about like NWA that, like, you know, it was aggressive and angry. Clearly that I'm down with the capital CBT. Boy, you can't fuck with me. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, cause Ice Cube is crazy as fuck. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of Compton. Well, I was thinking about more like Public Enemy. Like, I didn't even understand what they were talking about. I knew those lyrics verbatim. I could say Farrakhan quotes, and, you know, like, you know, singing about this one song that I want to play, and called By the Time I Get to Arizona, and it was about Arizona, and I think it was one of the states that wasn't at the time. It was 1991, was refusing to honor, like, MLK Day. What's a smiling face when the whole state's racist? Why I want a holiday? Damn it, cause I wanna. So if I celebrate it, standing on the corner, I ain't drinking no 40, drinking time with a 9. Till we get some land, call me the trigger man. Looking for the governor, huh? He ain't loving you hot, but hear the trouble, yeah, he's rubbing you wrong. All the, I mean, I could recite that whole song, like, front to back, and I knew who MLK was, you know, but I didn't really understand, like, but it was so impactful, like, his delivery and the lyrics and just the music was perfect for it, that, man, I was, like, ready. I was as pissed off as they were, you know, about, I have no idea what, but it was just that impactful. I don't know. It was like it just jumped off the records and kind of just gave you that feeling of being there at the time. And now, I mean, I get to go back and definitely understand that there was a heavy message. It was a... you know, turbulent times, and even the NWA stuff. I just saw the movie recently, and, like, there was for sure a lot of shock value and a lot of misogyny and stuff like that, but they were definitely talking about some heavy stuff that nobody else was talking about, you know, and it was and they weren't afraid to do it and stuff like that. And then you had everything else, like kind of the lighter hearted stuff, like Tribe Called Quest and some of that stuff that, you know, was fun and different and made you feel like it was okay to be different. Can I kick it to all the people who can quest like a tribe does? Before this, did you really know what I was? Comprehend to the track force, why? Cuz getting mentions on the tip of the vibe buzz. Rock and roll to the beat of the funk fuzz. Wipe your feet really good on the rhythm rug. If you feel the urge to freak, do the jitterbug. Come and spread your arms if you really need a hug. Afrocentric living is a, you know, it was such a heavy thing to dive into later in that. You know, as you get a little bit older, as I got, you know, later on in high school and started to get more of an understanding of how they actually made the music and samples and how they layered stuff and what they were sampling at the time, which a lot of the times was funk and soul and jazz, that actually opened the doors for me late in high school to get into jazz and funk and soul music that I don't know that I would have gotten there any other way.
You and mean then, like hearing a sample and being like, oh, that's, they're sampling, like...
Exactly. Whatever. Yeah,
whatever it is. And then you'd like follow that sample down the trail.
Like right before I came to UT, right before I came to college, I was just discovering jazz and discovering soul and all that stuff. And that was because of hip hop music.
Oh, you know, wow.
Because I just wanted to find out. And there was this whole community of people that wanted to find out. There was a couple of like magazines I remember that were around that talked about samples and what samples and... You know, there was, you couldn't just Google it back then. So there was like, it was kind of a little secret community of people that were finding. I mean, nowadays there's websites where you can just type in anything and know anything at all. But you know, back in my day.
You actually had to seek out information.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and when you were in your periods when you weren't really into guitar, were you experimenting with sampling? Once you knew kind of like what that was and how, were you trying to figure out how it was done and how you could do it?
Yeah, a little bit. I had this keyboard in high school, like a little Casio that had a little sampler thing, and which I'm bummed that I don't have that because now those are like awesome and kind of hard to find. But I kind of would mess around with those all the time and try to like, you know, emulate what I was hearing. And then I bought a 4-track and was kind of messing around with that. And then when I actually got to UT, I was at that point finally kind of doing both, and I bought my first sampler, I think, when I was 18 and was sampling a lot, but also playing guitar. And and I think, you know, it's still like the biggest influence in what I do musically, even like production wise and recording. And my favorite drum sounds are the drum sounds on hip hop stuff. You know, there was, you know, different eras of it. There was like the 80s where it was more kind of drum machines and programs. And then there was the kind of samples of the drum breaks, and that stuff to me is just, those are just still my favorite sounding drums.
And I think too, like hip hop and R&B, I think they're like the most experimental, mm-hmm. like pop music,
mm-hmm.
like that there is, like you hear sounds in like hip hop that you like you just don't hear in rock and roll.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
No, like they, like you hear when you really start to listen to it, it's like, what are they even doing? Yeah,
I love that there was no rules to it, because there's no sort of academic boundaries of how you do this. You know, it's like this, like a lot of those samples. Back then, they weren't even in the same key, you know, they were just doing crazy stuff, and it was just awesome. It was avant-garde and everything, and it was like folk music the way they started it, because, you know, folk music nowadays doesn't mean necessarily just like with the acoustic guitar or on the campfire or the you know, front porch, but it was like they made something out of nothing. There was a documentary actually called Something Out of Nothing, but they you know, it was kids that didn't have access to music education, didn't have access to instruments, really, even, you know, for the most part in underprivileged parts of New York, that, you know, wanted to express themselves, wanted to make music, found their parents' records, plugged into the light post, figured out a way to make music. And that's folk music, you know, to me, now that I can geek out on it. But
get your mic, the stage is empty. A beat like this might tempt me to pose, show my rings in my fat gold chain. Grab the mic like I'm on Soul Train, but I wait, cause I master this. Let the others go first so the brothers don't miss. Eric B, break the sticks.
You got it!
Rock him will begin when you make the mix. I'll experiment like a scientist.
You now you have a solo project that you're doing, like in the Echocentrics. Do you bring both guitar and hip-hop together?
Yeah, absolutely. I do feel like I've finally gotten to that point where it's just in me to kind of play a certain way or produce a certain way or write a song a certain way. And I think a lot of that also goes back to the production style, and that I like repetition. I like rhythm guitar. I was always more of, you know, into rhythm guitar than I was into, like, you know, when I remember friends like in ninth grade that, you know, we would like jam and start a band or whatever, and they all, like, some guys wanted to tap like Eddie Van Halen, and I just never was into that. Like, I was just always into the rhythm guitar, and I think that came from the fact that, like, some of the hip hop stuff that, you know, that influenced me was like they would take one part of the song and just loop it. When I was at UT and like started diving into kind of into Latin music, African music, basically all sort of with African roots, and that it's there was so much call and response and repetition that it was less about each individual player and more about everything coming together to do something. I could play the same thing for 30 minutes, and I just love that sense of falling into like a heavy, heavy groove. And yeah, I think that still definitely influences me, you know, that kind of that sort of hypnotic, like, repetition rhythm thing for sure. And that influences everything I do for now.
Do you fall into like a like, if it's good, are you in kind of a trance?
Oh yeah,
state?
That's heavy stuff. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, that's kind of the goal. Mm-hmm. I feel like you're hearing is Staring at the Ceiling by the Echocentrics, and like maybe the theme of this episode should be genres Elizabeth missed in the 90s, because I never delved that deep into hip-hop back then. I mean, I knew the hits by like Tribe Called Quest and Diggable Planets, but NWA and Public Enemy, I totally did not go down that road. It was, like Adrian said, music that seemed really dangerous, and I was kind of scared. But maybe it's because I'm older, or now this is just what I want to hear. But like, I want to hear more Public Enemy. It's so political and confrontational in the best way, and in a way that can be hard to find in mainstream popular music these days. So thanks, Adrian. Also, I could hear that repetition that Adrian talks about that he was attracted to in all of those tracks, which gives me like a whole new perspective on the Echocentrics. Speaking of the Echocentrics, they are KUTX's Artist of the Month for June. Every month, we focus on one Austin band here at KUTX, and we play their music a bunch on the radio, and we invite them into Studio 1A, and we have them do a My KUTX guest DJ set, and then we put it all in one place so that you can get to know that band better. I'll make sure you can find all things Echocentric on the This Song page for this episode. And I'll also make sure that I post a link to Django Django's Studio 1A set so you can hear what Django Django sounds like in a more stripped down mode. And that's it. We have come to the end of another episode of This Song. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9. This episode was produced and edited by David Sanger and me, Elizabeth McQueen, with help from Art Levy. I recorded both the Tommy Grace and the Adrian Quesada interviews. Taylor Wallace has taken over our Instagram and is doing an amazing job, so go check it out. Our handle is @thissongkutx. William Maxwell is our killer intern, and if you live in Austin, you should totally check out his band Dreamboat. In fact, they're playing this Friday at Spider House Ballroom, just so you know. Thanks to Peter Babb and Deidre Gott for all their help on this podcast, and yes, our theme song is Mahout. Mahout! By Austin's own excellent hardproof Afro beat, and like I said, they have a new live record out on Jim Enode's Public Hi-Fi Records, and I think you should look into that. You can email us at thissong@kutx.org or follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Snapchat. Our handle is @thissongkutx. You can follow us on Facebook, and you can subscribe to This Song along with the other KUTX podcasts, Liner Notes, Song of the Day, and Austin Music Minute on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. And like I said, while you're there, we'd love a rating or a review. Right on. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time.